Hi, and welcome to this special edition of The Macro Show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and in this episode, we're going to take a look at how quantitative easing works and try to dispel some of the major myths that it is money printing, that it leads to higher interest rates and a weaker dollar. You know, when people hear the term quantitative easing, all they hear is the term easing, and they immediately assume that it's money printing. And some people even go as far as comparing it to how the Bank of England or the Royal Bank of Australia do their quantitative easing programs. Even though there are some similarities, the programs are quite different. They then will find a chart online, as many of you have probably seen, showing how quantitative easing 1 through 3 has made interest rates go up. And that's not really entirely true. And so they assume that quantitative easing means the Fed is trying to raise long-term rates to create inflation. Now, what the Fed is actually trying to do is lower long-term interest rates and fight deflation. And as a result of this misunderstanding, investors will go out and sell all of their treasury bonds, notes, and bills. They will short the bond market. And yet, they do this even though they have no real idea of what quantitative easing is, how it works, or what the Fed's intended purpose is. They simply stop when they see the word easing, and then they look at that chart that floats around the internet, they see higher interest rates, and it makes selling and shorting the treasury bond market the most easiest trade and the most obvious trade there is. Now, let's start by taking a look at a paper from the St. Louis Fed, because with this paper, we can really understand what quantitative easing is. It is simply a large-scale asset purchase, or as the Fed refers to it, as an LSAP, where the Fed is going to go out and buy large quantities of U.S. Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities. They do this to fight deflation, as it is an expansionary monetary policy tool. Let's take a look at the St. Louis Fed article. So this article by the St. Louis Fed titled "What Are Open Market Operations? Monetary Policy Tools Explain" is a great resource into understanding what quantitative easing is and what it's supposed to do. So let's take a look at this article and some key points. And if you scroll down to how open market operations work. Now, anytime the Fed purchases or sells treasury securities or mortgage-backed securities on the open market, whether it's to raise or lower the federal funds rate or to engage in quantitative easing or quantitative tightening, it is considered an open market operation. So you can see here these buy and sell transactions are the operations where the Federal Reserve can buy or sell securities, including government securities like treasury bonds. The term open market refers to the fact the Fed doesn't buy securities directly from the Treasury. They're not allowed to do that. Instead, securities dealers compete on the open market based on price, submitting bids or offers to the trading desk of the New York Fed through an electronic auction system. And so this is a wonderful graphic down here where you can see the purpose of open market operations. And they're used to help promote stable prices, maximum employment by changing the supply of reserves, again, keyword that we'll come back to in the future, reserves in the banking system, which is designed to influence interest rates and the supply of credit. Now, expansionary monetary policy, which is our focus of this show, is like tapping on the accelerator. The FOMC wants interest rates to decrease. Now notice, this is key, interest rates to decrease. So the trading desk is directed to engage in open market operations, including purchases of government securities. This would include U.S. Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities. This injects reserves into the banking system. Again, this is all that quantitative easing does, is it creates reserves in the banking system. And this puts downward pressure on the federal funds rate, and thus other interest rates encouraging borrowing. And we'll look more at this in the future of this show to see how the Fed can influence longer term rates. So when the trading desk purchases government securities such as treasury bonds, the Fed deposits funds into the bank's accounts of the sellers. So this would be the securities dealer when they buy it from them. That payment then becomes part of the reserve balance that commercial banks hold at the Fed. This increases the amount of funds the banks have available to lend. This is very important to understand. All the Fed is doing is creating bank reserves. They're not printing money. This injection of reserves into the banking system puts downward pressure on the federal funds rate, which then puts downward pressure on other interest rates and therefore encourages more borrowing throughout the economy. Policymakers refer to this as easing or expansionary monetary policy, pushing on the gas pedal to give the economy more fuel and to encourage economic activity, such as in times of slower employment growth or a potential economic downturn. Now, the opposite of that would be quantitative tightening, and well, that's really not the focus of today's show. Now, open market operations are just one tool the Fed uses, and if you want, you can read this entire article. I'll link it in the description for you. So to further your understanding of how quantitative easing creates bank reserves, I'd like to refer to this article by my friend Jeff Snyder, the head of global research for Alhambra Investments, titled, "Okay, Bank Reserves, Let's Do This One More Time." And Jeff outlines in graphical form how quantitative easing works. So we're going to start out with, on the left, bank reserve accounting. We have Bank A with assets and liabilities. They'll be at zero. We have the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. They have assets and liabilities also at zero. And then on the right, the federal government also listed assets and liabilities at zero. So as we scroll down, the first process is the Treasury Department is going to auction marketable debt to the primary dealers and the public. And so they're going to issue Treasury bill notes or bonds, and the banks are going to buy some of them. Now, the banks aren't the only bidders at the auction, but for this process, they're the only ones that matter. So the banks are going to buy some of these Treasury securities at auction. And in this example, we're going to use $100. Now, if we look at the next step that happens, banks then pay the U.S. Treasury for the debt. So the banks take some of their checkable deposits, and then that is paid to the U.S. Treasury. And what you see is a process. Now the Treasury has auctioned marketable debt to the primary dealers and public and received cash for that debt. So the federal government has a liability of $100, and now they have cash of $100. The bank has an asset, the U.S. Treasury securities of $100, and a liability of $100. Now let's go to the next step. So here's how quantitative easing works. The central banks conduct quantitative easing or open market operations to buy U.S. Treasuries from primary dealers. Now, keep in mind that the Fed can also purchase mortgage-backed securities. It's a similar process, except the first step, the banks don't buy mortgage-backed securities from the U.S. Treasury. So here you can see the Fed comes in and says, we're going to take that U.S. Treasury security from you, the bank, and we're going to move that asset to our balance sheet. So you notice that's all that's done here is they've moved that asset, and at the same time, they've created a depository reserve or a liability. You will notice that shows up under the bank side as well. Let's go to the next step. Now, the central bank conducts quantitative easing here, and they're creating that reserve asset, and that is a liability. So this reserve asset is a liability to the Fed, and it becomes an asset to the bank. So you'll notice that not much has changed here. The bank still has $100 as an asset. The side of the federal government hasn't changed either. And so from the perspective of the banking system, this is all that matters. This is how they've changed the asset. They've changed the Treasury security into a reserve asset. No money has been printed in this process. So as you can see, the purpose of quantitative easing is to lower rates. And this is why QE is bond bullish. But we'll cover more on that a little bit later. So quantitative easing injects reserves into the system. It's not cash, so it's not money printing as most people believe. Now, in a debt-based monetary system, lower rates lead to tighter financial conditions until rates are low enough to spur credit growth. Now, the reason low interest rates lead to tight financial conditions is because the number one thing banks care about when they lend money out is getting their money back. And when rates are low, they need to make sure all of their money comes back because they don't have much margin to deal with defaults. So when we look at this whole process, the next major step is the banks must be willing to lend and consumers and businesses must be willing to borrow. So what we can do to figure out if banks are lending is to take a look at the quarterly Senior Loan Officer Opinion Survey published by the Fed that covers bank lending practices. And they often include a wonderful graph that shows what's going on in the banking system. So you can see the net percentage of domestic response tightening standards for commercial industrial loans. Now, the way you read this chart is when it's over the zero line, it indicates that conditions are tightening. So even though you see the graph going down, it's that they're tightening at a lower rate, but it is still a net tightening. So what you can see here is that financial conditions are as tight as they've ever been in history. And we can continue to look and see that even is true with commercial real estate loans. Financial conditions are really tight because during the past expansion, they barely eased from their prior levels. And even in the residential market, we see really tight financial conditions. So then the next step to look at is what's going on in the credit markets. And to that, we'll go over to the FRED database, which is maintained by the St. Louis Federal Reserve, and take a look at loans and leases and bank credit at all commercial banks. And what you see is a deceleration that typically starts in a recession and then often will contract shortly after a recession is over. But you can see very consistently that there is a contraction in credit. So it's decelerating here and then contracts, decelerating, contracts. Major deceleration in the Great Financial Crisis. And here we see, again, this major deceleration in all loans and leases. And now this covers residential real estate, commercial real estate, commercial industrial loans, and even consumer loans. And what it's telling us is there isn't enough new demand in loans due to tighter financial conditions to offset this deceleration in consumer credit. In order to get this to go up, the Fed needs interest rates to go down and they need banks to ease lending standards to spur credit growth, which is typically where you see higher interest rates. But when bank credit decelerates and contracts, it often leads to lower, not higher interest rates. When the Fed did quantitative easing during the Great Financial Crisis, it led to lower interest rates and a contraction in credit. And it wasn't until later, then starting in 2010, that we really saw credit expand due to lower interest rates. This is the primary reason quantitative easing is deflationary. It's deflationary until interest rates fall enough to spur credit growth, which then becomes inflationary. Now, quantitative easing also removes dollars from the system. When the currency supply of a country expands, interest rates rise. And when the currency supply of a country contracts, rates fall. Now, when the commercial banks buy U.S. Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities to sell to the Fed, they receive a reserve asset, not cash. Now, a reserve asset can't be spent in the real economy. It's a liability of the Fed. Reserve assets stay in the financial system where they have limited uses. They are not used to pay stimulus checks, Social Security checks, or anything of the sort. The net effect of quantitative easing is to pull liquidity from the financial system, which is why quantitative easing is dollar bullish, which we'll talk more a little bit later. So a reserve asset can remove inside the banking system by being traded for a U.S. Treasury or mortgage-backed security with another bank. It can be used as collateral for a loan as long as the banks are willing to risk their capital and the borrower is willing to risk their collateral. And last, it can be used as a deposit at a Treasury auction. Now, many claim quantitative easing leads to higher interest rates. Let's take a look at this. So I've got a chart for you of 30-year Treasury yields, and I've got quantitative easing in one in red, two in green, three in purple, and then the current one in teal. And if you go back and look, quantitative easing one started on November 25th, 2008. 30-year Treasury yields were 4.154%, and it ran through March 31st, 2010, where yields went up to 4.751%, a 0.561% increase. Now, on the 30-year bond, a 0.561% increase is not significant. Now, if we go to quantitative easing two, it started on November 3rd, 2010, and 30-year yields were 4.063%, and it ran through October 29th, 2012, where yields fell minus 1.3% to 2.763%. So the notion that quantitative easing leads to higher interest rates, well, that didn't happen during quantitative easing two. And quantitative easing three, which started in September 13, 2012, where 30-year yields were at 2.967%, well, it only rose 0.081%, which is insignificant movement in the 30-year yields, to 3.048% on December 29, 2014, when QE3 ended. And in the most recent QE, QE4, it started on November 11, 2019, where 30-year yields were 2.215%, and they've dropped to approximately 1.65% or a 0.56% decrease. So as you can see, there's no evidence that QE leads to higher interest rates. Now, what matters is the scope and purchase of the QE program. When the Fed is buying T-bills, it is designed to lower short-term rates. Long-term rates can rise, but there's no certainty they will. When the Fed is buying Treasury notes and bonds, it's to lower intermediate and long-term rates. Long-term rates can still rise, but there's no certainty they will, as history has shown. Now, today, the Fed is buying $10.5 billion of 30-year U.S. Treasury bonds per month. And at the monthly rate, dealers are only taking about $5 billion on average from these dealer auctions of newly minted bonds. And so presumably, the dealers will flip that entire $5 billion to the Fed because the Fed needs $10.5 billion. And the dealers are getting a new issuance of $5 billion, meaning the primary dealer banks must source, on average, $5.5 billion of 30-year U.S. Treasury bonds per month from the open market just to meet the demands of the Fed. So the Fed, by engaging in quantitative easing, particularly in notes and bonds, as it is doing now, is reducing the supply of 30-year Treasury bonds, on average, by $5.5 billion per month, meaning there are fewer T-bonds available in the market, which ultimately leads to lower long-term interest rates. Now, this is part of the Fed's broad program where they're buying a total of $80 billion per month in Treasury notes and bonds. Now, some say that lower supply leads to higher prices, yeah, but this isn't true. Lower supply leads to higher prices only when demand is weak, but demand for 30-year Treasury bonds is strong, as we've seen in the recent dealer auctions. Now, with every passing month, there are fewer 30-year treasuries available, which will ultimately lead to higher bond prices and lower long-term yields, which is exactly what QE is designed to do. Now, many claim the QE also leads to a weaker dollar. Let's explore this. So we're going to go back to the Fred database and pull the chart of the trade-weighted U.S. dollar index, broad goods and services, and let's go and look at what happened in QE1. From November 25th, 2008, the dollar was 100.8, and by March 31st, 2010, it was 92.1, an 8.6% decrease, which would give some evidence perhaps the dollar does fall during quantitative easing. But in quantitative easing 2, which started on November 3rd, 2010, the dollar was 89.7, and by October 29, 2012, it rose 1.7% to 91.2. And in quantitative easing 3, which started on September 13, 2012, the dollar was 91, and on December 29, 2014, it had increased 12.6% to 102.5. Now, the current QE program, number 4, was started on October 11, 2019, when the dollar was 116.9. It has dropped a little over 4% to 112. But here again, there's no conclusive evidence that QE leads to a weaker dollar. All quantitative easing is a swap of reserves between the Fed and a commercial bank. That's all it is. And the bank uses their cash to buy the U.S. Treasury or mortgage-backed security that is ultimately swapped with the Fed from the primary dealers, most of which are owned by commercial banks. The bank then makes those U.S. Treasury securities or mortgage-backed securities into a reserve, and then the Fed swaps those for a reserve asset. The net transaction is cash is exchanged for a reserve asset, thus removing dollars from the financial system using a U.S. Treasury security or mortgage-backed security as an intermediary. Now, the dollars and the Federal Reserve notes, or cash, are really important to the Fed. They do not want these dollars to become worthless, as many believe. And by removing dollars and bonds from circulation, the Fed can attempt to increase their value. And there are also claims that quantitative easing causes the money supply, or the M2, to rise. It's important to understand the Fed has no direct control over the M2, only the monetary base. So any increase in the M2 due to quantitative easing is purely circumstantial. For example, let's say that I own a bond and I choose to sell it. It can be sold to another investor or perhaps to the security dealer who chooses to hold it in its inventory, perhaps to flip to the Fed. I receive dollars, which then go into the M2 under institutional money funds. My decision to sell was not based on an invitation from the Fed to buy it. Now, while my bond may ultimately end up on the Fed's balance sheet, there is no certainty that it will. The only way that sale of the bond can end up in the real economy is if I withdraw money from my account where it moves from a different part of the M2 where I can spend it. The same is true for hedge funds who have sold approximately $15 billion of U.S. Treasuries over the last year between October 2019 and 2020. Many people think that has gone into the economy. Their choice to sell was not based on an offer from the Fed. The only way that money shows up in the real economy is if it was withdrawn from their account by their customers or clients and spent into the real economy. Now, some say that money was reinvested in equities, and perhaps it was, but $15 billion is nothing to a stock market with a $37 trillion valuation. And as the world's reserve currency, one of the roles of the Fed is to protect that status. If the Fed could willingly debase the dollar, which it can't, it would make the dollar undesirable as an intermediary for global trade. If the Fed willingly lowered the value of U.S. government debt, it would also make our debt undesirable to our foreign trading partners who buy our debt to tamper the inflationary effects of dollars that they receive through global trade. So by doing quantitative easing, the Fed seeks to strengthen the dollar and increase the value of our government debt. And by doing both, they hope to pull aggregate demand forward as American consumers desire to purchase foreign-produced goods and services with borrowed money, which then in turn leads to an increase in global growth and inflation. And so now you can understand how quantitative easing works and what the ultimate purpose of it is. The Fed is trying to lower rates and increase the value of the dollar to get American consumers and businesses to borrow money and spend it into the real economy and spend it out into the global economy. And once it gets out there, it then will start to multiply through the banking system, create more dollars, create inflation, and ultimately economic growth. So hopefully now you can understand by watching this show that you now know what quantitative easing is, and that the myth that is money printing, that it leads to higher interest rates and a weaker dollar are just not true. I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. I appreciate you taking your time. The content of this video is provided as educational information only, is not intended to provide investment or other advice. Material is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell a security, financial product, instrument, or to participate in a particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter in my own personal capacity. The opinions expressed on this video of that one do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.